are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts. I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, also host of Locked On Rockets, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we're going to be chatting with Sean Coleman of Locked On Grizzlies as the surging Memphis Grizzlies are at the top of the Western Conference amongst the other Western Conference elite in the Suns, Warriors, and Jazz. Just how good have Ja Morant and company been this season and across their franchise best 11-game win streak? Then we chat with Mike Richmond of Locked On Blazers with the news that Damian Lillard is going to be out 6 to 8 weeks after abdominal surgery. Is it time for the Blazers to potentially hit the rebuild button on the Damian Lillard era? And then lastly, we chat with Alex Wolf of Locked On Knicks with the Knicks acquiring Atlanta Hawks Cam Reddish. What does Reddish's role look like for the New York Knicks? Is he going to start right away, come off the bench? And are the Knicks finally turning a corner this season? As always, thank you so much for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Joining us now is the most wholesome host on the Locked On Network, Sean Coleman of Locked On Grizzlies. Maybe I have to revoke this title for you, Sean, because a peek behind the curtain as Sean joins our recording software program, he doesn't come in with the name Sean Coleman. He comes in with the name Zaire Williams greater than Jalen Green is how he popped into the chat room, coming in with the heat. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. We've got Zaire Williams. Y'all have Jalen Green, counted as another victory when it comes to the Southwest Division. Jackson, always a pleasure. Hope you've been good. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me, sir.
Absolutely a pleasure to be able to talk hoops with you, even when you're throwing slander towards the Houston Rockets. But you're here to talk Memphis Grizzlies basketball. And the Grizzlies are fresh off the heels, the longest win streak in franchise history, unfortunately being stopped at 11 games in a row with some really impressive wins over the Suns, the Nets, the Warriors. That one was a really big one. And they're currently sitting at third place in the Western Conference. Sean, it feels like in the linear progression of rebuilding, it feels like the Grizzlies may have skipped a step there, because usually you go from being that pesky, like play-in, like eighth seed team to being like a mid-tier playoff team and then to being in like the upper echelon, the elite of the conference. But the Grizzlies find themselves there alongside the likes of the Suns, the Warriors, and the Jazz. It's been a really impressive run this season for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it is, you know, you're correct. You know, you typically, you know, that's the thing that's made this Grizzlies rebuild so much fun is that they started off at a higher point 2.5 years ago to start the 1920 season, higher than many thought. They were in the playoff conversation and last year. They made the playoffs this year. They're now looking like they're going to get home court. And the thing about it is that it's not like last year, for instance, a lot went in their favor outside of their control, right? But the thing about it is that this year, yes, that still has happened. But the one thing that the Grizzlies are doing, Jackson, is they're just consistently playing at a high level. I would say right now that the Grizzlies may have one of the highest floors consistently of any team in the NBA. They're playing good defense. Ja Morant is leading the offense with a, you know, in my opinion, all-NBA type season. And the Grizzlies are doing well at winning the game through getting more possessions than their opponents, turning defense into offense, getting offensive possessions, so on and so forth. So it's been exciting to see. But the even more exciting thing for me is that Dylan Brooks is out. He's been out for half the season so far, and he's going to be out for another month with his injury. We've had Jaren Jackson Jr., who really hasn't got his shooting stroke going. De'Anthony Melton's taken a step back. We haven't seen the best version of this Grizzlies team as of yet, but yet the version that we are seeing is consistently getting the job done no matter who the opponent is, and that just leads you to believe, I don't think they're a contender this year, but it puts them in a great spot to eventually get there and be there for a long time.
You know, you mentioned you can't talk about this Grizzlies team without mentioning Ja Morant's name. And he, you know, Sean, when I get the chance to watch Ja play, he plays with such a level of poise and control to his game, you know, understanding when he needs to take over, but also understanding how and when to trust his teammates to allow them to do their thing as well. at this point, Sean, it feels like more so of a win and not an if when we're going to see Ja Morant one day hoisting an MVP trophy over his head. I'm that high on him. I have been for a long time. I think he's one of the supreme talents and stars in this league. What has it been like to watch his growth, though, this season? Because he's still just in his third year, and he continues to have these, you know, these growing moments. And you see the jump that he's made from this year, or last year, I should say, to this year. And it's been really impressive.
It's finally people realizing that, yes, the shot, his shot from distance and his defense are still going to consistently be works in progress. But people through much of last year had the opinion that that's what's going to keep Ja Morant from even being a star. That's what's going to put Ja Morant kind of in the upper echelon of the mid-level point guards, or it's going to keep him from being truly elite. That's not the case at all. Never has been, in my opinion. And I think people are realizing this year, yes, the shot is improved. The defense can still be a weakness at times. But the thing that's always been there, Jackson, with Ja Morant is that there is elite to his game. It's his ability to get to the rim. It's his ability to create for his teammates. His ability to stay consistent. But it's also his mindset that he's going to get the job done. Every single time he's on the court, he feels he's the best player out there, and he's showing it consistently night in and night out. And now you have a player leading the NBA in third quarter scoring, second in the NBA during clutch situations when it comes to scoring. He's stepping up at the most important times of the game. So the overall progression of his game with his shot and his defense is certainly grand, but the ability for him to consistently deliver no matter who the opponent is at the most important times is also is what is standing out, along with the persona and the brand.
Are you able to look back at that gap that he missed of time for the season for the Grizzlies and kind of look back with a new perspective on it and kind of view it as something that may have in the moment not necessarily been viewed as a positive? Obviously missing your star player is never great, but then to look at how this Grizzlies team progressed through that period without him, learning to win without your star player on the floor, and to be able to look back at that and say, you know what, that was not necessarily a needed experience for this Grizzlies team, but something that they absolutely took and built upon. And now you've got Ja back, you're kind of clicking on all cylinders, and like you said, we haven't even seen the best version yet of this Grizzlies team.
Yeah, what it put a bunch of players in, you know, when it comes to Jaren and Bane, all the way down to John Conchar, Killian Tilly, and others who had to step up. These players were put in a position where there was no if. It was you've got to. Like, there was no option to where you cannot, like, if you fail, it's okay because you've got Ja. In this situation, we're going to ask you to step up, and we're going to need for you to deliver. And that's exactly what they did. I don't think it's any coincidence that Ja going out is when Bane became one of the best shooters in the NBA with the numbers to back it up. Jaren became one of the best interior defenders in the NBA with the numbers to back it up. They had to step up and be the go-to guys, be the main reasons why the Grizzlies were going to win, and that's what they've been able to do. And it's been great to see, though Jaren has struggled a bit offensively, it's been great to see that they've continued in those roles even with Ja back. Dylan did the same. Hopefully we'll get him back. But for guys up and down the roster, and that's the thing that stands out about the Grizzlies, from 1 through 15, they stepped up, and not only that, they delivered, and they had the confidence of knowing that they can do it with how consistently they did it with Ja out.
I think it really does speak levels, Sean, to what Taylor Jenkins has really built there in Memphis, because you have guys up and down. I don't think it's a stretch to say that across any other team in the league, I think the Grizzlies might be one of, if not the deepest team in the league, with just players they can plug in and get production out of on a nightly basis. And that is a testament to what Taylor Jenkins has built there.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is because he put so much trust, he gained so much trust, gives these players so much reason to trust him because of how much confidence they have in him. But Jackson, what it comes down to now is just the evidence that's there, that if a player gives Taylor Jenkins the keys to drive, he's going to lead them into a direction that's going to take them to higher heights than they had before in their career. Up and down the roster, from Ja jumping up to All-NBA level, Desmond become one of the better shooters in the league, Jaren becoming All-Defense, all the way down to John Conchar, proving that he could be a part of the playoff rotation or be a main guy off the bench. Everyone on this roster has either regained or experienced recently a better version of themselves than they thought they would be either before they came to Memphis or the many had of them before they came to the NBA, and that's what stood out. It's the development. I would put the Grizzlies' development ability up there with anybody in the league, and it's a testament to how organized and how special Taylor Jenkins is at gaining the trust of his players, but also being able to put them in a great position to not only succeed, but consistently be the best version of themselves.
away from the floor, Sean, I think the Grizzlies had one of, if not potentially one of the best like social promotions that I've ever seen, where they went out and said, you know what? If you have an old jersey of another team's player, you can bring that in and exchange it for a brand new, fresh replica jersey of Ja Morant or Jaren Jackson Jr. and a pair of tickets to an upcoming Grizzlies game. That was just incredible to see. What was your reaction to that promotion when they dropped that recently?
Oh, it was outstanding. And I can't confirm this, but I do think it's correct. I think that the jerseys that they gave, that they were able to exchange the most, I think one on that list was James Harden. Second on that list was Chris Paul during his Rockets tenure. Third on that list was Jalen Green. It was just amazing. And the fourth one on that list was Gary Bird. It was crazy, just the level of jerseys. I'm kidding. It was great. And that's the thing that stands out. Memphis is hitting on every single level, On the business side, Devin Walker, who does the social media for the Grizzlies, he does not miss. There is just crazy amounts. There are levels to success. And why it's so important, Jackson, is because you've got a team on the Grizzlies right now who put so much effort into being the best that they can be on the court, but they're also, they keep up with what's going on off the court. They want for their brands to be represented in the best way possible. They want to know that they're getting the recognition that they deserve. Memphis does such a good job, from the franchise to the city, everybody involved does such a good job of making sure that that happens. And that is especially important when we've got talents like we've never had before in Jaren Jackson Jr., Ja Morant, and the rest. Everything about the Grizzlies right now is firing on all cylinders. Another great promotion, great idea just in general. I mean, it's better than Houston's ever done when it comes to promotions, in my opinion. So.
You know who else is firing on all cylinders? It's Sean Coleman. That's of correct. Locked On Grizzlies. You've got to go check out Locked On Grizzlies if you haven't done so yet. You can follow. You should also follow the Grizzlies social media team, because the Grizzlies, I follow very few other like team accounts besides the Rockets. Keeping up with the teams, obviously, but you know, as far as direct actual team accounts, and the Grizzlies is one of them, because their social media game is absolutely on point, just like yours, Sean, where people can follow you at Stats SAC on Twitter. Appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me, Sean.
Hey, Jackson, it's always a pleasure. Hope we can do it again soon. Great to get to talk to you again. Go Grizzlies. And, you know, by the way, I will say this. I did find a new clinic here in Memphis. If your neck gets sore looking up them standings over the next several years, just let me know. I'll make sure to get you to a good physical therapist to take care of that crick in that neck, okay?
Coming up, do the Blazers enter a holding pattern with no Damian Lillard for the next 6 to 8 weeks? Or can we be expecting a fire sale at the NBA trade deadline? But first, a quick message from our friends over at Shopify, because Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business. So upstart startups and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility with Shopify. You can reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. Go to shopify.com/lockedonNBA, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of amazing features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/lockedonNBA right now. That's shopify.com/lockedonNBA. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA, as always, thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. For your next listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast, nightly recaps of every NBA game with analysis from our local experts. Listen to Locked On Now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch it on the new Locked On NBA YouTube channel. Joining us now is your pass first point guard, Mike Richmond of Locked On Blazers. Mike, we've got CJ McCollum, who's missed significant time, Neil Olshey out as the long-term GM of the Blazers. Now the news that Damian Lillard is going to miss up to, you know, 6 to 8 weeks after this abdominal surgery. If you had to pick one word to describe the Blazers season to this point, what would it be?
Rugged. they have had some tough sledding. Since about June of last year, it has been it's been tough for them. You know, they fired the head coach. There was some uncertainty about Damian Lillard's future. Then their president of the business side stepped down. Then they lose their GM and with Neil Olshey, and now they're an interim GM. Now then they've had injuries, and here they are with just a lot of questions and a whole bunch of bumps to get here to this point.
You know, it's at this point, it's not quite like a fork in the road for the Blazers, but it does kind of present an interesting opportunity, right? How does this organization handle the rest of this season, right? And I kind of wonder, you know, in your eyes, should they be viewing this as a chance to, you know, bottom out? Is there a hope they can maybe maintain some type of a holding pattern? I know that the surgery wasn't listed as like a season ending surgery for Dame, but let's be honest, right? 6 to 8 weeks when there's only 10 to 12 weeks left in the season, it's basically a season ending surgery at this point.
Yeah, he could come back middle of March, and they would have something like 15 games left. It's hard for me to see a reason why he would play in those 15 games. I'm sure he'll want to. These dudes are competitive, but from an organizational standpoint, hard to see why he would be involved in those last 15 games. I think if the Blazers had their way, they would be a true tank job, right? Like, they would be truly bad. The problem is that the bottom of the West just is also bad right along with them, with all due respect to our friends who host Locked On Kings and Locked On Pelicans. Those are bad basketball teams. The Locked On Spurs, shout out to Jeff Garcia, also a bad basketball team. Just like a whole bunch of teams down there, not to mention that team that plays in Houston. A team good at being bad, right? So I don't know if they have a way to truly tank it. They've got too many vets on the team. They've probably got a little too much talent to just like lose and lose bad every night. So they're in a strange spot. I think it's a pivot point for them, what they want to do. I think they want to be good next fall, but it might be better for them to be bad right now. And that is a tough needle to thread.
Hey, shout out to the Blazers, though, because at one point I remember looking at the standings and they were right there in the bottom of the West, you know, back to back with the Houston Rockets. So I will say that at one point there was, you know, some impressive losing going on from the Blazers organization. But you talk about this being, you know, an interesting pivot point, right? Obviously, there's been some uncertainty, you know, before the season with Dame, his future with the organization. Could this potentially be viewed as the point, right? Maybe I think on the surface, you're looking at it as, okay, are they potentially going to retool around Damian Lillard and try to be competitive next year? Or is this finally that point where you want to cross that bridge and say, you know what, it's time for the Blazers to hit the reset button and rebuild? Because it's not like Dame is getting any younger.
It's true. Like all of us, Jackson, he's aging every day. You know, they don't want to trade him and he doesn't want to leave. So while I think there's a pragmatic discussion, and if you listen to Locked On Blazers, I had Nate Duncan on the episode that is available right now in your feeds as you're listening to this. And we talked about exactly that, like whether it makes sense to trade Dame and sort of really reset, or if it makes sense to retool. The organization wants to retool. What the Blazers are going to try to do is be good with Damian Lillard on the roster over the next two seasons, at least. I think there's like a real discussion to be made about tearing it down to the studs and resetting this thing. But that direction they're going to go is to try to maintain some level of competitiveness. And I think the question that you see with veterans like Norman Powell and CJ McCollum and Yusuf Nurkic and Robert Covington, people who could help other teams, is how far do they go? How far do they pivot with those names potentially all available heading into the trade deadline?
Yeah, and with the trade deadline just, you know, a matter of weeks away, I wonder, in your eyes, are any of those names like truly untouchables in the eyes of the organization? Or is it pretty much just if somebody, you know, calls up Joe Cronin with the right offer, then anybody could be on the way out the door at the deadline this season, seeing as how largely with no Dame in the picture, and honestly, even when Dame was playing, the Blazers were unfortunately just 12-17.
They
had a really rough start to this year, right? You kind of punt on the season anyways. So is it, all right, can we maybe be expecting almost like a fire sale potentially at this deadline as they try to retool and get the right names for next season?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hard part, right? Like, I do think every other person on the roster not named Damian Lillard is available. Anfernee Simons looks like a really good basketball player. He's averaging 28-8. If someone calls and offers another really good basketball player that could potentially be a better fit, I think you say yes. Like, if you're going to go for it with Dame, you sort of have to prioritize veterans. You're going to need to prioritize size. The Blazers did this sort of like Pokemon thing where they collected every 6'3" scoring guard in the universe and added them to Damian Lillard's roster alongside him. And with all due respect to Ben McLemore, Anfernee Simons, Norm Powell, and CJ McCollum, all good players, not great fits next to the franchise star. So they got to figure out a better fit. I think CJ could be traded. I think Norman Powell could be traded. I think Yusuf Nurkic and Robert Covington will be traded. I think the right offer for Anfernee Simons, he's on another team as well. But they're not trying to go young, I don't think. They're trying to improve the roster. And That path seems murkier to me, Jackson. That seems like a tough hill to sled.
You know, I wonder, I can't help but think, Mike, you know, just, and it sounds like based on the reports that we're hearing coming out of Philadelphia, it sounds like the price for Ben Simmons may have actually is going up, apparently. And I don't know if that's just Daryl Morey manipulating the media, trying to leverage himself into a better deal, as he's been known to do through his time, you know, with Houston and previously. But at this point, you know, do you see the Blazers potentially being a player for Ben Simmons if they were to put all their chips on the table, anybody not named Damian Lillard? Or do you think that's kind of the stopgap in the negotiations is Daryl Morey would want Dame back in a potential Ben Simmons deal?
I think from the Philly perspective, and you might have to ask the duo over at Locked On Sixers this, they might know better than me, but I think from a Philly perspective is that their asking price remains, you know, one of the top 30 players in the league. And while CJ McCollum probably at his peak is pushing somewhere in there, is that what you sort of project him as is the next couple seasons. I think eyes of the beholder on that one. I probably don't. And if I don't, can't imagine many of our other co-hosts do as well. But yeah, I think something like CJ and a whole bunch of picks could be I still believe CJ McCollum is the best player they could probably get in a trade. Doesn't mean that they want him and doesn't mean that they'll do it. But yeah, I think it could be on the table. Would I recommend that the Blazers trade 4 picks and 3 pick swaps and CJ McCollum to get Ben Simmons? No, don't do that. But yeah, sure. I think it could help in the near term.
You know, and this is a name you mentioned just moments ago, Anthony Simons, who has been playing out of his absolute mind, right? You mentioned averaging the 28-8. His numbers are off the charts. He's had a 40 piece against Atlanta, I believe it was, yeah. A couple 30 burgers since January. Is there maybe a little bit of a silver lining where you think, okay, you know, with Dame, you know, missing some significant time, Anthony Simons, he's a young name, right? He's not exactly somebody that is on, you know, approaching the wrong side of 30. He's maybe a guy that maybe the Blazers want to hold on to for the long term rather than, you know, trying to move him immediately. Is that at least the silver lining moving forward for this team, his you know, play as of late?
Absolutely. I mean, he looks like a budding star in the league. I've joked about this a couple times on the podcast. If I'm the Detroit Pistons, I'm giving Anthony Simons $80 million this summer. Like, I'll just find out if he's good or not. I would do it in a heartbeat. I think he's the best. He would be, for what they need, a really wonderful restricted free agent. You know, do I think that every Simons on a good team would average 28-8? I do not. I do not think this dude is like a high level all star immediately, but he's proven to be really good. And if maybe in a slightly reduced role where he doesn't have this crazy high usage, like, he seems like a guy who can really score. He's taken steps forward as a playmaker. He's really good. The problem is a 6'3 guard who can really score and is developing as a playmaker next to Damian Lillard is the thing they've been doing for a decade. Can they really do it again? Like, I don't think Avery Simons is bad. I just think feels a lot like CJ McCollum. And if the direction they're going to do in part two of the Damian Lillard act in Portland is a new version of CJ McCollum, that's both of these thumbs, if you're watching on YouTube, both of them down. He's a really good basketball player, and I think you keep him on the team because of talent. But if the plan is to build around Dame and another guy that feels like CJ, okay, fine. But we know how this story ends.
Mike, that's going to make an incredible thumbnail. Obviously, all eyes on the Portland Trailblazers as we approach the NBA trade deadline. What do they do? Is there a fire sale pending? And you're going to have us covered for all of that over at Locked On Blazers. Mike, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, Cam Reddish is now a member of the New York Knicks. What does his role look like under new head coach Tom Thibodeau? And are the Knicks finally turning a corner this season? But first, a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Because look, it's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. If yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, maybe even better than a candy bar, because they've got so many amazing flavors to choose from. Strawberry, mint brownie, peanut butter, coconut brownie chunk is my personal favorite. Cookies and cream. You can't go wrong with a single flavor on their menu. Look, you want to eat healthy, right? But it just gets so boring, right? Trying to stick to your New Year's resolution. Built Bar can help you, and you can check them out. Just go to built.com and use promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your very next order of the best tasting protein bars on the market. Again, that's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. And another message from our friends over at betonline.ag, because BetOnline would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. A new year and a new updated desktop and mobile website, where if you sign up today using promo code LOCKEDON, you will get a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON, L-O-C-K-E-D-O-N, for a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC, even your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. And final segment here at Locked On NBA. As always, appreciate you making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Now make your second listen Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all of your gambling needs. Make a little money with Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. Joining us now is Alex Wolf, one of the hosts of Locked On Knicks. Alex, I come away thinking, maybe it's a little too early to say this, but Cam Reddish, potentially a steal here, not quite at the NBA trade deadline, but potentially as we navigate closer to the NBA trade deadline. I walk away thinking that this deal, just overall, looking at the structure of it, Kevin Knox and a first round pick by way of the Charlotte Hornets for Cam Reddish, Solomon Hill, and a 2025 second rounder. I think this is an absolute steal for the Knicks. What was your reaction to this deal?
I really liked it. You know, it's funny, like Reddish's name had come up a few times, you know, obviously he was just generally available, but then, you know, we did like a mailbag show, for example, on Locked On Knicks. And someone of course was like, oh, would you want to trade for Cam Reddish? And basically exactly what they wound up trading him for was the exact package that I said, like, yeah, I think that's what I'll be comfortable giving up. You know, I think that's Charlotte first round pick. I mean, it's a first round pick in name, but, you know, it's never going to convey as anything higher than the 15th pick. So, you know, and that's only if it delays like 4 years. I think it's like top 18, top 16, top 16, top 14, and then conveys as 2 second round picks. So, like, if it conveys, cool, like, good for Atlanta that they get that pick. The Knicks have done well with late first round picks like that. But I think ultimately, and this is probably what the Knicks front office saw in him, you know, nobody is going to have as much potential as Cam Reddish at that spot. You know, if you get a 18th, 20th, whatever overall pick, you can't really find a Cam Reddish there. Nobody with like that high of raw potential. And I mean, this is a dude that was like ranked number one in his high school class by a lot of people going into that season at Duke. You know, ironically, Zion Williamson was the only one that you really couldn't find ranked number one too often. RJ and Cam were sort of like the very common one and two in that class. And so like from the Knicks perspective, I totally understand it. You know, you take these sort of swings when you can. And, you know, I think that maybe they could have found another Quentin Grimes or Emmanuel Quickly if they held on to that pick. But, you know, as great as those two guys have been, Grimes is a rookie, Quickly now in his second year, and as much potential as we see out of them, I think, you know, if things fall right with Cam Reddish, you know, we literally heard his own ex-GM and his own ex-coach both said, like, we think he could become a superstar. We're really kind of sad that he didn't want to stick around here. So, you know, I think you take a really good gamble with him. And, you know, the skills are tantalizing. He's a great pull-up generator, I should say. He's not a great pull-up shooter yet. You know, not enough of them are going in, but he's good at finding a shot. He showed in high school, at least, you know, that he could be a really good passer. He could break guys down off the dribble. You know, he's shooting almost 40% from three this year, so seems to be turning a corner there, 90% from the free throw line. Things are looking pretty good. I really like the gamble by the Knicks on the Reddish deal.
So Reddish was reportedly, you know, pretty vocal about wanting a bigger role than what he was, you know, kind of stuck with, I guess, for lack of better terminology, with the Atlanta Hawks. And as unfortunate as that is, with, again, receiving high praise from within the organization there, you know, is he essentially walking into, would you imagine, like a starter's role with the Knicks, or is that something he's going to have to earn his way towards under head coach Tom Thibodeau?
Definitely the latter. I don't think he's going to just like walk right in and start. You know, I think that they maybe have plans of giving him a look in that capacity and saying, hey, you know, if he's playing well enough, we will elevate him to that. Cause then it'd be pretty cool to be able to start him and RJ Barrett, you know, as former Duke teammates and then as Knicks teammates. You know, if they can develop together, that's pretty good for the Knicks. But he's not going to just walk right into it. Unfortunately, I mean, for him, the Knicks already have almost like a logjam. You know, it's only been freed up by like injuries and COVID absences recently that the Knicks haven't just had way too many players that deserve to be on the floor that can't actually see the floor. You know, you have Obi Toppin, who has been like, you know, one of their best per minute players for large parts of the year, sometimes struggles to get 15 minutes on the floor any given night. Like, Quentin Grimes, who I mentioned already, has played really, really well. He's already a good 3-and-D NBA player and can struggle to find 15, 20 minutes any given night, even when there's injuries. So, you know, I don't think Reddish is just going to walk right in and have a role handed to him. I think if I had to guess, especially early on, he's probably going to have a quick hook pretty similar to most of the rest of the Knicks young players. You know, they'll probably try to find 10 to 15 minutes for him early on, but he'll have to really earn his minutes and you know, earn that spot going forward, especially because finally, for pretty much the first time all year, the Knicks really seem to be sort of finding something with both their starting lineup and their bench unit, which they're probably not going to be too keen to disrupt. You know, so I don't think that they're going to be like, let's make a wholesale giant change to fundamentally how we play by playing Cam Reddish more, because, you know, they're finally kind of sort of starting to turn the corner here. And I don't think they want to mess that up potentially.
That's exactly. I mean, I was going to say maybe Cam Reddish is joining it at the opportune time, right? Because it does kind of feel like the Knicks are maybe kind of turning that corner just a little bit here. They're 8-3 over their last 11 games, starting to string together some good quality wins. I mean, as far as that goes, though, I think one of the issues kind of looking at the Knicks season to this point is I think you have to look at Julius Randle and his numbers just kind of across the board, not where they were at last season, unfortunately, especially that three ball just not falling at a quality clip. You know, as far as, you know, Randle goes, was last season just kind of lightning in a bottle, or is there at least a hope or an expectation that he can get back to that level of play that he was at last year?
I think what's happening this year is that Julius is running into a lot more opposition from opposing defenses than he did last year, coupled with the fact that, you know, he and the entire NBA, to be completely, you know, fair to him, are all experiencing shooting regression this year because you're not shooting in empty arenas anymore. You know, you're shooting in buildings full of people again. You know, the noise, the movement, everything else is enough to, you know, throw off guys with their, you know, their shooting touch. And so, you know, I think that he struggled a little bit early in the season. The Knicks sort of intentionally wanted to take some responsibility off his plate to say, hey, like, you don't have to be the main guy every single minute of every single game anymore. We want to make life easier for you. Give you Kemba Walker, Evan Fournier, you know, RJ Barrett, a year older, getting, you know, more comfortable with running the offense, generating his offense, generating offense for others. And I don't know if Julius was necessarily ready for that right away. And that sort of led to early in the season, it just seemed like nobody quite knew what to do with one another. Nobody knew who should be handling the ball. Julius seemed to always think that it should be him. You know, I think Kemba Walker was playing too passive early in the year, which led to him getting benched, comes back, starts playing more aggressive. And then Julius for a little bit was being a little too passive or maybe too deferential, like intentionally deferential to the point where it was almost a detriment to the team. Now I think he's finally starting to find his balance. And I think the biggest thing that we're seeing that's leading the Knicks playing well now, what's funny is, like, out of that 8 of 11 that they've won, the first three in a row were not super encouraging. They were facing a bunch of teams that were really hurt by COVID absences and really, like, not at full strength. And then since then, we've started to see them face teams that they're beating a little more comfortably now. And now this current three-game win streak they're on, I think, finally is one that fans can feel a little more confident about. Because they're doing against teams that have most of their roster back. They're, you know, they themselves have most of their own roster back. So things are starting to take shape as far as how things should hopefully look the rest of the year, barring another COVID outbreak or something in a few months. But, you know, I think that Julius is really settling himself in a role where he's not feeling like he has to initiate every time, but where he's making good reads again, like he did last year. So even if the 3-point shot isn't falling quite as much now, or even if he's not even scoring as many points on any given night, he's still providing a positive impact by being a ball mover, by, you know, sort of finding his spots, but not being afraid to just pass it to someone else who is cooking or whatever and let them work with it. And it's really starting to work out well for the Knicks. They're finding a great balance, I think, between him and RJ Barrett is sort of their 1A, 1B. and really finding better ways to get guys like Evan Fournier, Alec Burks, Quentin Grimes, Mitchell Robinson at center, you know, involved in the offense in productive ways, more so than they were last year. Or sorry, earlier this year, I should say.
RJ Barrett, I'm glad you brought him up a couple times there, but I've been really impressed with him, especially over this last little stretch of time. He's about these past seven games, he's putting up basically 25 points on almost 50% from three. You know, he has had a few 30-point nights kind of in the mix there. Are you starting to see him kind of taking that next step, that next, you know, accessing that next level of his game?
Yeah, I really hope so. It certainly seems that way as of right now. You know, he's it's been a weird season for him, you know, and every single year of his career has been start off the season pretty well and then hit a massive, massive cold streak and then close the season strong. He did that his rookie year. He really did that last year, where last year down the stretch after opening the season shooting like 15% or something from three over the first like 20 games, he closed out the rest of the season shooting 45% on high volume and wound up shooting 40% from three for the year. This year, we're starting to see a much more diverse bag of tricks with him. Now, like, depending on what you think actually happened or whatever, or what, you know, the Knicks have alluded to and been a little aloof about him having some sort of stomach bug or illness of some sort earlier in the season, which really led to him having one of those just like ghastly cold stretches. And, you know, he started off the season real strong about the first five, six games, had this like 18 or so game long, just terrible cold stretch, started to figure it out, then hits the COVID list and then comes back from the COVID list, was kind of cold again, and now is starting to really find his stride again. So if you believe what the Knicks have been alluding to, that he did have some sort of illness earlier in the year that was really holding him down, then yeah, I think maybe we are starting to finally see him turn the corner and do it in a sustainable way. You know, the way that he's finding his shots is so great. He's handling the ball well. He's finding, you know, really interesting ways to score the ball. You know, mid-range pull-ups, which weren't really part of his bag before, he's been bringing those out to great effect lately. He still can shoot the three ball quite well, and he's been shooting a lot of spot-ups, which has been great for him, off of Julius Randle, you know, generated opportunities, which is great to see. You know, he's starting to get to the hoop and use his body more and finish confidently around the hoop, and, you know, all these various things have just led to him being, he's starting to really come together as like a three-level scorer that also has good enough vision and timing to run pick and rolls and find teammates out of situations that he generates. So I really like what we're seeing from him. I really hope that it is sustainable this time around. And if his first two seasons prior to this are any indication, he should end up finishing this year off really strong. And if he does, then yeah, you know, if we get a solid 30, 35 game sample of how he's been playing lately, I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah, I think he's probably turning a corner at this point.
The newest New York Knick, Cam Reddish. You're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Knicks. Alex, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me. And yeah, check out Locked On Knicks. We got all kinds of great stuff, Cam Reddish and otherwise, because the Knicks finally starting to be fun again. And it's a great thing to see.
That's going to do it for another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google, the brand new Odyssey app, free and available on all platforms. Also, check out the new Locked On NBA YouTube channel. Go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA, like, comment, subscribe. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts.